This is Radioactive, a weekly grassroots environmental and social justice news journal for February 13th, 2014. This is Meredith DeFrancesco. Today we reflect on the role of community radio, first in an interview with a member of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, whose low-power FM station has had a role in organizing for farm worker rights in the tomato fields of Florida. Then we highlight some of the voices from last month's Rally of Unity in Augusta, with a specific look at actions to resist systems geared to perpetuate environmental instability. News and public affairs programs on WERU Community Radio are set up to highlight the voices of the community, the ideas and the actions. The community members are the news subjects. We try to emphasize those working to make positive changes for the community. You create the news, and we try to reflect that in our programming. We try to be a clearinghouse of information and to amplify the issues that are important to you. If this community service is important to you, we ask you to please call in with a pledge of any amount at 1-800-643-6273 or online to weru.org. Last month, we reported on the groundbreaking work being done by the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, a Florida-based tomato farm workers association, for better pay and working conditions. Their work has revolutionized a system which has held farm workers in abusive conditions without a voice and dismissed growers and retailers from responsibility or repercussions. In last month's coverage, however, we did not speak about the Coalition of Immokalee Workers' community radio, Radio Conciencia. And on this week on WERU, when we're celebrating the role of community radio, it seemed an appropriate time to reflect on that role in other communities as well. Radio Conciencia is a low-power FM community station with a 15-mile radius. That 15-mile radius, however, covers the agricultural town of Immokalee and has helped to inform workers of their rights, won by the coalition's work, and of upcoming meetings and actions to further that work. It has also served as a clearinghouse of information in emergency situations and as a forum for cultural expression and music. Radio Conciencia, also nicknamed La Tuya, meaning yours, was established in December 2003 with the aid of a Prometheus Radio barn-raising effort. We spoke with Sylvia Perez, an organizer with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, a farm worker, and a Radio Conciencia programmer. She is translated by Jake Ratner, an organizer with Just Harvest USA, an ally organization to the Coalition of Immokalee Workers in Immokalee, Florida. So how it started and its role in organizing for social justice and worker rights.
Voy a explicarle un poquito el tiempo que yo tengo acá, porque la radio ha estado funcionando.
And so I can tell you a little bit about the radio station. I myself have been involved for about 5 years or so with the programming here on the local community radio station, but it has been in existence for about 10 years. And while I can't speak to the way in which it was created, I can tell you that it has been an amazingly powerful force in working towards change here in Immokalee. And so we have programming starting at about 5 in the morning when farm workers are just headed towards work, and the staff here at the CIW and others in the community split up the time so that we always have radio hosts who are having different shows related to the community and the events that we have going on. We'll speak about the rights that people are guaranteed and the different actions we have coming up, invite people to our meetings and to the protests that we have.
Y entonces aquí también esta es una radio comunitaria.
And so the radio station here is a community-based radio station. And what we mean by that is it's open to the community to come in and have programmings that will impact the farm worker community of Immokalee. And so, for instance, we have a health professional from the local clinic that comes in once a week to do a show about health and different health problems that people might confront here in Immokalee. We also have a group once a week from the Alcoholics Anonymous Association that comes in and speaks about their work here in the community and how others can get involved. And so we call this a community-based radio station because it is open to the community and it's for the community. It's not a commercial station. And so also when there's a crisis that happens in the community, whatever that may be, we are able to organize a response to that. And so, for example, when there's a freeze, which happens every once in a while here in Florida, we know that the living conditions that most farm workers live in are really substandard and not equipped to deal with those low temperatures. They don't have heating, and so to avoid people from freezing, we can set up a community-based response where we find out where the shelters are in town and coordinate efforts to get people from the farm worker housing and the trailers to those shelter spaces.
Calentón y todo eso. Aquí también se les anuncia para los trabajadores para que no se quedan en sus casas. Y cuando también, supongamos, pasa un huracán.
And so that's also been particularly important when there's been hurricanes that have happened here in Immokalee, which happen every once in a while, and we're able to organize a response to get people quickly from their homes into those hurricane-safe shelters, whereas otherwise they would really have no access to that information. And it's also been extremely important with our campaigns and the different protests and actions that we have around the state. We use it as the main tool to invite people to join us, to come out on those protests or those tours, and to take part in the campaigns that we have.
Mm-hmm. Y también aquí los sábado y domingo.
And so one of the other programs we have here is a cultural program where we dedicate 2 hours to solely playing marimba music, or marimba. And that's an instrument that comes from Guatemala, and which the community asked us to have specific programming dedicated to that type of music in order to really not lose our community ties and in order to not stray too far from our roots, to have a space that is dedicated to continuing those musical traditions and playing 2 hours of just songs that are from the marimba music.
Que también aquí los miércoles, todos los miércoles tenemos junta comunitaria con los trabajadores.
And so maybe just to also mention some of the community-based work that we do here in Immokalee, which is really the heart of our work and our campaigns. Every Wednesday night here, we hold a meeting at the CAW of farm workers, and we speak about different issues that affect the farm worker community, and we do so in a way and in a style that reaches across languages. And say, for instance, people can't read and don't know the rights that are contained in the booklets and that they've won under the program. We bring those up in a way that people can begin to engage and learn about all the rights that they are guaranteed working in this industry and all of the work that we have won and will continue to work on together.
And one of those ways was, Jake was saying, beginning with theater. There's a use of theater in organizing.
Se usa mucho eso. La gente le gusta a veces cuando...
Yeah, theater is definitely a form of communication that we use a lot for those meetings where we start off by having a short theater piece. And that's something that people really connect with, that they become engaged with and they see the issue in a different way. But then also we can lead a reflection session after the theater piece and begin to pull out from the community the different ideas that people have around that theater skit. And one other thing that I'm a part of is we have a women's group that meets here every Sunday for 2 hours. 1 hour is just the time. It's a time for conversation for us to be able to come together as women. And then the second hour is around education in English classes that we teach each other these skills that we want to learn. So having that space where women can come together and begin to express the rights and the challenges that they face as women in the community is extremely important for us as well.
Gracias por venir a saber la información.
Thank you so much for taking the time to come and see a little bit of the reality that farm workers live here in Immokalee and the program that we're building.
For a longer interview with Sylvia Perez and further coverage of the Coalition of Immokalee's work, you can go to the archives of Radioactive on WERU.org and look up the January 23, 2014 program. However, now we can quickly review the CIW's work. Since 1993, the Coalition of Immokalee Workers in Immokalee, Florida, have been tirelessly advocating for a change to the abusive labor conditions and poverty wages that plague their line of work. After 20 years of organizing, public campaigns, direct actions, and negotiations with retailers and growers, the Coalition of Immokalee Workers has facilitated the comprehensive implementation of the Fair Food Program, with its accompanying code of conduct for participating growers and its penny per pound premium for participating buyers. The Fair Food Standards Council, the designated third-party implementing organization, monitors the labor practices at participating farms by conducting regular audits and interviews and by operating a hotline for workers to report abuses without fear of retaliation. Abuses are investigated, and growers can be put on probation or suspended from the program if problems are not rectified. After Walmart signed onto the Fair Food Program last month, there are now 12 national retailers who have pledged only to buy from growers who adhere to the Fair Food Code of Conduct. In 2010, the Florida Tomato Growers Association, which claims representation of 90% of Florida's tomato growers, signed onto the Fair Food Program, effectively kicking it off. Now instances of slavery, physical and sexual abuse and harassment, wage theft, and access to shade and drinking water can all be monitored by the workers themselves. The Coalition of Immokalee Workers and the Fair Food Program has this past year been awarded a Four Freedoms Medal from the Roosevelt Institute, has been recognized by the United Nations Working Group on Business and Human Rights for quote-unquote innovatively addressing core worker concerns with quote-unquote an independent and robust enforcement mechanism. Last year, it was also recognized by the White House as one of the most successful and innovative programs globally uncovering and preventing modern-day slavery. The Coalition of Immokalee Workers campaigns continue, though four of the five major fast food restaurants in the country have signed on to the Fair Food Program, Wendy's still has not. And though Whole Foods and Trader Joe's have signed, other grocery chains, the largest consumers of Florida's winter tomato crops, refuse to participate. This includes the Florida-based chain Publix. Both Publix and Wendy's have been the target of CIW actions for a number of years, and the hope is Walmart's participation in the Fair Food Program will pressure the whole industry, including grocery chains, to pay the penny per pound premium and observe labor and human rights. Next month, the Coalition of Immokalee Workers will kick off its Now is the Time tour. It will include actions in Columbus, Ohio, at Wendy's headquarters, and in Lakeland, Florida, at the headquarters of Publix. For more information on this organization, you can go to ciw-online.org. And if you wish to contribute to your community radio station, WERU-FM, you can go online as well to WERU.org. You can go there to listen to locally produced public affairs programming like Radioactive, like the WERU News Report, like all of the small features that you hear in Morning Maine and at other times during the week and weekend, and to the 10 o'clock block where there's excellent programming every week here on your community radio station, and would love to get your support in any amount that you can. 1-800-643-6273, 1-800-643-6273. Any amount is welcome. Again, you are listening to Radioactive, a weekly environmental and social justice news journal on WERU 89.9 Blue Hill and 99.9 in Bangor. We turn now to some of the speakers from the second annual Rally of Unity in Augusta last month, a broad conglomeration of social justice, peace, and environmental organizations under the umbrella of the Alliance for a Common Good, converged in the State House January 9th to highlight the need to prioritize community and environmental sustainability over corporate-dominated politics. We start with MC Maria Gerard, a citizen of the Penobscot Nation.
My name is Maria Gerard. I'm a citizen of Penobscot Nation and a member of Penobscot Tribal Council, and I have the great honor of welcoming you all here today to the second Rally of Unity organized by the Alliance for the Common Good. And before I go on any further, could you help me in thanking all the organizers and all the speakers today that made this possible? So welcome here to the Hall of Flags, here to our State House, here to Augusta, to ancient Kushnook, ancestral Penobscot territory. Bunawupskewi, Penobscot people, are the longest continuous stewards of this land and these waterways. Unfortunately, our environmental and social justice struggles have also been long and continuous. We currently find ourselves embroiled in yet another legal battle with the state of Maine, defending our territory and our inherent right to fish. Attending this rally and being here today is important for all of us to feel hopeful. We look around at each other, and we don't feel so alone in our struggles. We look around, and we see our teammates. There's strength and comfort in unity. I also feel hopeful because my ancestors were anticipating this very period in history. Ancient Native prophecies predicted a time when the seas turned black, when the rivers ran with poison, and when the fish became unfit to eat. And it seems to me that we've nearly reached that point now. But they also prophesized a period of hope, the emergence of new people who would forge new relationships, They would do this by returning to the original instructions of peace and justice. New people who could define their common ground and work together for the good of all. Exactly what we're doing here today. According to this ancient prophecy, the work of the new people, the Oshkima Adizyig, the new people, will determine the fate of humanity. We can choose a path of materialism, greed, and destruction, or we can choose a path of peace and harmony. So despite the chaos and the craziness in which we sometimes find ourselves immersed, there's a glimmer of hope, but also a crucial mandate for action.
Well, I'm just really overwhelmed with emotion, and I'm really excited to be here, so thank you. My name is Iris Sangiovanni. I've lived all of my 19 years in South Portland, and I am now a freshman studying political science at the University of Southern Maine, and I am a member of the Student Coalition of Maine Students for Climate Justice. I'm here today. I'm here today to talk about my involvement in both the UMaine's systems divestment campaign and South Portland's campaign against tar sands oil. And from these experiences, I've observed the true financial power that the oil industry has in our education, our politics, and our future. I've always seen the role of an institution of higher education to foster the future leaders of our communities. With that said, how can a university invest in an industry that is directly linked to the destruction of our future? How can we be leaders in our communities when these communities are below sea level? When I pay my tuition at USM, I am investing in my future. I cannot allow the UMaine system to continue to invest in our endowment in industries that will make our collective future unlivable. In fact, divesting the UMaine system endowment would be consistent with our institution's mission statement, which declares the University of Maine supports sustainable development, environmental stewardship, and community involvement. We are simply demanding that this promise be followed through. Divestment is a great tactic for pushing the fossil fuel industry to change. And let us follow in the footsteps of Unity College and the College of the Atlantic, both who have already divested. Right. And on top of that, have only reaped in the benefits of higher enrollment and free publicity. Let us join forces to make Maine a leader in climate justice. Maine has also been put in the situation to be a leader in the movement against tar sands oil. In my hometown of South Portland, a project was proposed to export tar sands oil from Alberta, Canada, through existing Portland-Montreal pipeline, which would involve a flow reversal of a 65-year-old pipe carrying an oil far more corrosive than crude. So the question would not be, will the pipe ever burst, but when? A citizens' initiative fought back on this proposal from ExxonMobil and the Portland Pipeline with a waterfront protection ordinance, which eventually led to a citywide election. I think we all know that money is involved in politics, especially during elections, and through the campaign, it became crystal clear. A friend of mine from high school suggested I join him canvassing because I could receive $15 an hour, and then they told me it was against the Waterfront Protection Act. It was the money of the oil industry versus that of the people. The oil industry had resources like paid canvassers that our campaign just didn't have. We relied on volunteers. Canvassing on the weekends, I would come to a door and it would be littered with propaganda against the Waterfront Protection Ordinance. And by election day, our citizens' campaign had only used roughly $7,000 versus the oil industry, which used more than $600,000, more than a 10-to-1 ratio. And it resulted in their victory, a 51% vote against a 49% vote. Now, this story could easily end in defeat, but we rose from the ashes and fought back. And now I can say that there is a 180-day moratorium that was passed, a 6-1 vote by our city council just this December, that halts any action. And this moratorium halts any action towards the tar sands project so that we can really evaluate the consequences and write a new ordinance that would protect us. And we are on our way, but from what I've learned through all this is we're not alone. South Portland became a tar sands frontline community, but so did all of the towns along the pipeline in Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont, stretching all the way up to Alberta. And furthermore, the communities along the KXL pipeline. For us in South Portland, we fought tar sands to prevent the destruction it could bring to our future community. But let us be reminded of the destruction tar sands has already brought. Let us stand in solidarity with the First Nation in Alberta whose lands were unlawfully taken and used to extract tar sands oil, and their land will never be the same. The fossil fuel industry goes against all the values we have as Mainers, and that is why we need to divest. Thank you.
The public hearing for LD 1461, an act to require the state to divest itself of assets invested in the fossil fuel industry, was heard before the legislature's Appropriations Committee on the day of the rally. While it did not pass out of committee, the 350 Maine divestment team made this statement, quote, in part, "After Thursday's hearing, there is no doubt that addressing climate change is on the agenda in Augusta. The committee listened and responded. We didn't get committee approval of the bill, but we did move the discussion to the point of requiring the Maine Public Employees Retirement System to conduct a study on how to incorporate environmental social governance into their policies when selecting investments for the pension fund. ESG and socially responsible investing are one and the same thing, though we all realized that the votes to override the governor's inevitable veto of this bill were not there. It's important to note that this compromise garnered unanimous support on the Appropriations Committee. Each member, whether a denier or a climate hawk, agreed our state pension fund needs to be making socially responsible investments. This is what you won by supporting LD 1461, end quote. The 350 Maine divestment team stated work will continue on this issue. Sponsor of LD 1461, Representative Brian Jones, spoke to the rally prior to the public hearing.
I'm Representative Brian Jones from Freedom. I'm the sponsor of LD 1461, an act to divest the state pension funds of fossil fuel investments. This is a powerful gathering of people, and I hope those who serve on this floor and on the third floor are listening to us. We're here to tell our elected officials that we stand for and fully expect environmental, economic, and social justice. Amen. Now, in a few minutes, just down the hall over here, the Appropriations and Financial Affairs Committee will hear testimony on LD 1461, and we're here to tell the committee that it's the right thing to do. We all know climate change is real and that the primary cause is the burning of fossil fuels. It's not acceptable to continue our investments in companies that reap profits at the expense of the environment. Our children, our grandchildren, and their grandchildren deserve a livable planet. We already see the effects of climate change here in Maine. Our clam populations are decimated by invasive green crabs, our shrimp fisheries are closed, and our lobster populations are threatened. Our ski areas are concerned about long-term changes in snowfall, our maple syrup industry is threatened over the long term, and the composition of our forests is gradually changing. Invasive pests and mosquito-borne diseases are migrating north, all in large part by burning fossil fuels. We cannot keep doing what we're doing and maintain a sustainable environment for future generations. We need to withdraw from corrupt, unsustainable energy systems and simultaneously create new systems that are both equitable and sustainable. Now, the transition to a sustainable renewable energy economy that addresses these environmental issues and climate change, that slows the depletion of our natural resources and builds an economic infrastructure not controlled by the financial elites, that's what we need, and we need it now. Now, in case our elected officials are not listening, 3/4 of Americans and 3/4 of Mainers believe that we will have serious climate change if nothing is done. Now, to counter this perception, the people know this. 3/4 of us know that we must do something. But to counter this, fossil fuel companies have spent $347 million in campaign contributions and lobbying efforts in this congressional session alone. Guess what? They got their money's worth. They've received over $20 billion in subsidies. Now, these subsidies amount to direct handouts to corporate polluters. This crony capitalism must end, and as our state, our complicity in that industry must end as well. Just to be perfectly clear, the fossil fuel industry currently controls fuel assets, reserves that, if burned, will produce more than 5 times the amount of greenhouse gas emissions required to raise global temperatures above 2 degrees Celsius. Now, that's the level that 167 countries, included the United States, have agreed represents the threshold beyond which civilization cannot survive without enormous human suffering. Sooner or later, investors will realize that the proven reserves far exceed the amount that can be safely burned, and that these stranded assets will render that portion of our retirement fund and our college investments without value. The aspect of divestment, however, that is most powerful is not the idea of starving fossil fuel companies of funds, but the opportunities implicit in reinvestment. Let Maine once again be a leader, not by investing in the old ways that lead to destruction, but by investing in truly sustainable economic development and prosperity for our people and our environment. Thank you.
In other news on movements to combat climate change, after a national day of action following the release of the U.S. State Department's report on the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline, over 77,000 people have signed the Keystone XL Pledge of Resistance. This pledge is to participate in an act of nonviolent direct action to stop the Keystone XL pipeline. Two Keystone XL Pipeline pledge resistance trainings in nonviolent civil disobedience have been scheduled in New Hampshire, one at the Durham Friends Meeting House on February 22nd, and another at the community radio station WCSA in Portsmouth on March 2nd. You can stay tuned to WERU for further coverage on this and many other environmental and social issues. And you've been listening to Radioactive, a weekly environmental and social justice news journal on your community radio station, WERU. You can call in a pledge at 1-800-643-6273. Thank you for listening and acting.